That's all that anybody can do, is just one day at a time. Another thing is also make a decision. You know, figure out what do you want to do with your life. If you're not sure, this isn't going to work. If you know what you want to do, what you want to have, and most importantly, what do you want to feel in your life, if you really can just be confident and just say, yes, I know what I want, I know what I want to feel, I know what I want to do, this will work, because staying clean will afford you all those kind of things. Working the steps will bring all those kind of things. But when I was undecided and I didn't know if I wanted to get clean, I didn't know what I wanted to do in my life, I couldn't stay clean. It just never worked. Another thing that's really important is that you may remember having things go good for a few days because you're clean for a few days. Like I used to keep a little calendar. And if I was clean for 2 days, I'm not an addict because I didn't use for 2 days. I'd mark it. But I remember, like, I would stay clean and things would start getting better, but then the blessings were on their way, but then I would sabotage it. I would stop them because I would use again. So, like, the job that I almost got, or the girlfriend, or the fun time, or visiting the family, it would almost happen, but I would always mess that up. And so one of the greatest gifts that Annie has given me is that now I don't have to worry about that. Now I know when the blessings are coming, they're going to keep coming. They may not be exactly how I expected it, but I'm going to feel okay. And that's why I want it to go good anyway. You know, I've had things not go my way, but I felt okay. I wanted them to go my way so I'd feel good. But this program has taught me that we can feel okay before, during, and after whatever situation we go through. Because more than anything, what Annie has shown me through these steps is that everything I've ever looked for has been, is, and always will be inside of me. I don't need to change the way I feel. I don't need to put things in me. I don't have to do any of that. I have to change my views and my attitudes and my perspectives. I have to change my vision. And that's what NA has done for me. And that's a process. That's certainly, I'm not standing up here perfect or Superman or Captain Recovery or anything like that. Not me. This also takes maturity and discipline. We have to do things we don't really like to do. Like go to a meeting we don't really feel like going. We have to grow up. Women have to become women. Men have to become men. Because I know when I got here, I was like a little boy. And I can go back there real fast, you know, get mad or act very immature about things. The other thing that's always helped me too is try to stick to what I know. Try to stick to the facts. Like, a guy, a sponsor, called me up and he said, oh my God, it's the end of the world. It's the end of the world. And I said, what do you mean it's the end of the world? He said, well, I only have $3 in my checking account. I said, that's the facts. That's what you know. Today, you have $3 in your checking account. That's the facts. But what the disease does, it turns that into, oh no, and all this stuff, and it gets bigger and bigger. And pretty soon, what do you think we're going to do with those feelings? Because they say a bird flies, an fish will swim, and an addict will use. And so it's very important for me to really stick to the facts. What do I really know? Is that really true? You know, oh, somebody said this at work, or they think this. Is that really true? Do I really know that? The disease will just feed on that kind of stuff. And the other thing is be very, very careful of what you practice. If you remember learning riding a bicycle or playing guitar or drive a car, if you practice it, you get good. So if you're practicing a defect, you'll get very good at it. If you're practicing a principle, you'll get very good at it. So it's very, very important things. And when you're going through, one time in a meeting, a guy said, I was talking about all the stuff I'm going through all this stuff. And he says, when you're going through hell, don't stop. When you're going through hell, don't stop. I was like, what do you mean? He said, just keep going. You'll get to the other side of it. So I'll tell you some about my story. I'm sure you'll relate to it. Because, you know, when I came to NA, nothing could stop me from using. There was a killer that nothing could stop. Nothing. And I walk in the room, and I listen, and I leave. need, but I don't feel like using it. Now, that may not sound like a big deal, but I'm talking about somebody who could not stop no matter what stopped. And I'm not talking about something minor. I'm talking about a cold-blooded assassin. I'm talking about something that was killing me. Now, I grew up in a family that didn't show very much love or affection. We weren't, and I was always very romantic, you know. I mean, the moon or just huggy and love and all that kind of stuff, you know. But my family wasn't like that. We didn't say we loved you, you know. They didn't show love, didn't show emotions. So that really, really affected me. And I was the youngest child. By the way, my whole family are addicts, and I'm the only one that made it. Nobody else did. My mother died clean, though. No one found recovery. Several members, several family members died, a couple were murdered, horrible deaths, things like that, cousins, uncles, grandparents. But when I was very small, there was a couple things that happened. The first thing that happened was the first day of school, when I was about 5 years old, I had to go bathroom. And the teacher wouldn't let me go bathroom. So I pooped in my pants and had to sit in it all day. And everybody laughed. That traumatized me so much that the first day of school, my second grade and my third grade, I got so scared that I pooped my pants. Another thing that happened to me was my mother passed out drunk one night. And she was very beautiful. She was a model. And I wanted attention. And she was drunk, and she was passed out. And I was so sick as a little bitty boy that I took a lighter for a cigarette, and I heated it up with a flame, and I got it hot, and I put it right on her face to wake her up. And it scarred her, put a scar on her. This is a little boy. Later on, I was up in my room, and I was dancing what was called the twist. Some of you might not know the twist. Joey Dean Starlighters, Chubby Checker. I'm not going to demonstrate it, maybe tonight at the dance, I don't know. And so I was doing this in front of the mirror, and I didn't know they were watching. And so later that night, they had a big party, and everybody's drunk, and they're all at this party, and they call me downstairs. And he says, come down and do your dance. And I was like, wow, they saw me. So I started doing my little dance, you know. And everybody started laughing at me. So again, I'm feeling lower. And I was the youngest member of the family, and my parents never let me do anything. And that gave a message to me, there must be something wrong with me because they never let me do anything. So this goes on and on and on. So I'm feeling very, very traumatized. I'm feeling very, very strange. And then I remember when my father, we went to the petrol station to get some petrol. And I remember I used to like to get out of the car and smell the fumes at the petrol station. And I remember when we had the little candy vitamins, children vitamins, I used to take 3 or 4 of those. And so very early on, I'm acting very strange. And then my first drug was probably the Beatles. That was probably my first drug. I got so much into music, and my family are all musicians, and I could express myself, and I was really talented, and I was on a pedestal, I could express myself, people gave me attention, and everything was going really good, and then disco came out. And disco came out, and now they don't want the bands to play, so now my music goes up another notch, because I don't have that kind of, like, fulfillment I'm getting from those kind of things like that. So then one day, and I come out of the late 60s and 70s, Woodstock, all that stuff, and I was right in the middle of it. I saw Jimi Hendrix when I was like 12 or 13 years old. I mean, just all kind of amazing stuff. And I remember one time this guy was giving me, I was at the drug dealer. He's giving me drugs. And I said, I don't want that much. And he said, you don't want that much? He said, that's good, because the less you need, the closer you are to getting off on nothing. And that really was profound, especially when I was drunk. But it was like, you mean that maybe we can get high naturally? We can get off without anything? And so I started thinking about that. And this was in late 1972. And then something amazing happened. I quit using on February 2nd, which is Jimmy Kay's teen date, by the way, but he's 1950. But I quit using February 2nd, 1973, which is like 42 years ago. And then I was going to meetings, and they didn't have any in those days, they just had AA, and I never felt quite at home. And then I had, 1 year clean, 2 year clean, 3 year, 4, 5, 6, about 6 years clean, I was getting kind of cocky, arrogant, and I was thinking, I think I can do this on my own, maybe I'm not really an addict. And then I had 7 years clean. And then in March of 1980, I decided to go watch a soccer game or a football or something. And I ordered a beer, and I'm looking at that beer, and I'm like, one beer, cool. I drank it. No big deal. Went home. Week later, I come back. Drank a whole couple pitchers of beer. Then I couldn't wait a week. I waited one day, came back. Drank 2 pitchers of beer, went to the strip club, the striptease, then went to the drug house, then got a bunch of drugs, then got arrested, then lost my job, and then went into jail. And I was like, boom, 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 like that. It was like, and that was it. Now, let me tell you this story because it's very important. I was out relapsing for nearly 19 years. I had a year, I had a 6 months, I had a few months, but I just was in denial. I just wanted to do it on my own. And I just stayed out. I kept thinking, I'll get back. And I was overdosing. I had a great career, and I'm losing that. I'm doing all these things, and pretty soon I'm, homeless and just losing everything. And I'm still in denial. And why I tell that story is two things. It wasn't the program's fault. I stopped going to meetings. The other thing is that time period, it went by like that. And all of a sudden it was like 19 years. So when I came, I found NA in the phone book. So I love public relations. I love our GSRs and our secretaries, our treasurers. They open these meetings, keep these meetings going. And I love our public relations, so I found out about NA in the phone book. I never knew what it was. So I want to give applause to our GSRs, our secretaries, treasurers, and our PRs. Now, I went to that first meeting. I don't remember anything, but I'm sure they thought I was insane. Because I do remember one thing. I do remember that I was making a lot of faces and a lot of contortions to my body. And I must have looked crazy, because I was. But I remember a couple of slogans. I remember one is too many, 1,000 never enough. I remember just for today. And I used to tell myself, you can stay clean just for today. You can do it just for today. Tomorrow you can do it just for today. And that really, really helped me a lot. So I've been clean ever since then. And so in 2 weeks, I have 15 years. Back. It was a very, very long relapse, and I know now that it takes what it takes. My hope for the first 3 years back was all about self-forgiveness. I hated myself. I come crawling in here like a snake. I come crawling in here with total anger. I was violent. I was angry. I was vicious. I was, I had no esteem. I just hated myself, and I couldn't forgive myself because I had clean time. All my friends were like 40 years, 45 years clean, and I'm just like hating myself. But that was an interesting thing, because I've come to accept and understand that's my story. That's my path. Why that happened? It had to happen. It had to happen for me to be standing right here, right now, or it wouldn't have happened. I am completely sure of that now. I'm not trying to be new age or something like that, but I understand how all these things happen. So when I got clean, it was really the last 2 months of my using. Well, the last few years, one thing happened. I got this money. I got $78,000, and I spent it for 10 months on drugs. 10 months. If you think you can't do that, I don't suggest it, but you can do it. You can do it. I mean, it's like, what, $200 a day, and I just went through that. At the end, I was, do you ever try to hide drugs or money from yourself? Smart, isn't it? Really insane. So I would take money or drugs and hide it in my mother's house, and I would lock it in there, and I would be like, okay, I'm not going to use on Friday night. If I use on Friday night, I'm definitely not. If I use Saturday, probably not so bad. So I would wait till midnight, Friday night, and I'd break in and get the drugs and I'd use it. I'd say, see, I made it. Now, the back door of her house, it looked like a beaver, you know, beaver? Like a bear? It'd been chewing on it. Because I can break in that back door to do that once or twice. I probably did that hundreds of times. And every time, I thought I wouldn't do it. Every time, I thought I wouldn't do it. I ended up getting locked up a bunch of times. I ended up trying to commit suicide one night. I didn't have any drugs. I didn't have any money. I had this old dope fiend car that had half a bumper and the taillights broken and no insurance. I hadn't had a license for years. By the way, I had a professional license. I was working at FedEx. I was the biggest employee award in the company, and they gave it to me. And I went from that to a bicycle. And I had a safe driving watch and all these kind of things. So one night I'm trying to kill myself. I drive to this intersection on purpose. I push the gas pedal down, and I go crashing into cars. And fortunately, I didn't kill myself. Unfortunately, I didn't kill anybody else. But the judge said, that's it. You're never driving again. So I haven't driven a long, long time, except in Bangladesh, and let me drive there. But you know, when the newcomer comes to the meeting, and they say, oh, I couldn't get to the meeting. It was too far. I've ridden my bicycle in, you know, negative 20. I've ridden bicycle all kind of weather, bus. I go all over the world. And they'll say, you can't get to a meeting? Come here, see that guy over there? Go talk to him. He goes everywhere, he doesn't have a license. There was a lot of horror stories, you know. There was, you know, stealing money from my mother who was dying, you know. You know, when I think back of those days, you know, that we can wake up today with dignity. Do you remember waking up with no dignity? No self-respect. You dreaded waking up, and you had to use so you didn't have to face those feelings. You know, I had a using dream a couple months ago. Yes, I still have using dreams. And I remember having a dream that I didn't use, and I'd wake up and I said, oh my God, I used last night. What's wrong with me? I did it again. I'd pull the sheets over my head, and I'd just cry myself to sleep. Well, I had this using dream, and I woke up, and I was like, oh my God, that was a dream. I didn't use, I'm still clean. So what a difference. What an amazing difference. So I remember in those early days, I was doing some pretty strange things. My first year clean, I really got involved, you know. I was like, I ain't going to do no 18-year relapse again or something, or any relapse. I didn't date anybody. I just did service and steps and tradition. I was just so focused, and I did that for about the first 5 years. I just really had to get a good foundation, because I'll tell you what, the foundation helped me. Because my mother died, I had an illness problem, I lost a great career, they went bankrupt all of a sudden, dream job. Of course, you know, lost girlfriends, friends, not just one. All those things, I had to go back to jail clean, I had legal problems, the United States government taxed sent me this bill for $32,000, and that's almost all paid off. So I went through all these things clean, I got sued, and then my sister who's a using addict, she disappeared. I haven't talked to her for 12 years, and she's still using. She doesn't want to talk to me, and I haven't seen her or talked to her for all these years. But one of the things that I used to use a lot over was, when I was a little boy, my mother would be drinking, and my older sister, who's the addict, that I haven't talked to or seen in many, many years, she doesn't want contact. I don't even know where she is. She would bring me in her room, and she would molest me. And then she would bring my retarded brother in the room, and they would both molest me. Sexually molest me. My mother knew this. And so we would walk right by her while she was drinking, watching TV. And they would take me to bed and do this. So of course that really had a traumatic effect on me. And for a long time I just didn't understand why. And I felt really, really bad. I felt there was something wrong with me, that I did something wrong. That had a lot to do with my using. Because when I did my first fourth step, I connected a lot of dots from my childhood. What happened to me? I was a good little kid. How did I become suicidal? How did all these things happen? I remember when we were new, and it was five of us, and one guy had a beat-up old van, and one guy was half crazy, and it was a young girl with two kids, and she was like 19 years old, and there was another guy, and none of us had jobs, and we were just all 30 days clean, but we just stuck together. And we would just go to meetings and do service. And I really, that's a beautiful memory, such a beautiful memory. We wouldn't have money. One night I would have money and we'd buy coffee. Next night the other guy would have money. But we just stayed together. And then one day I got a job and I was taking the bus to the work. And on this bus, there would be all these mentally retarded children who would get on this bus because they went to this place where they did rehabilitation for them. And pretty soon they knew me. And so I would get on this bus, and all these retarded children would come and say good morning and hello. And it was so, so beautiful, because I had no self-esteem when I came here. And now people were loving me and respecting me, and you guys were loving me and respecting me. So all this amazing things started happening. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment, because I finally found out what Jimmy Kay meant when Jimmy Kay said, when you finally know who and what you truly are, your battle will be over. Because we're not that disease, we're not those defects. We're a divine spark. We're complete, we're whole, just by breathing, just by being alive. You got no money, no job, you didn't get anything done today. You couldn't be any better. You couldn't be any better just being alive. You have what's inside of you that's making that sunshine. That makes you special. If you had a box, you know, box, like cardboard box, if you had a box and you had dirt inside, the box isn't that important. We're the box. If you had that box and you put a 20 karat diamond inside that box, wouldn't that make that box special? But we don't know that. Because the world tells us this is what makes you whole. This is what defines you. This is what makes yourself worth. It's like a friend of mine one time, I said, Steve, I said, how come I'm such an asshole? He said, you're not an asshole, you just act like one. And I said, oh, so this is what Jimmy Kay meant. When you finally know who and what you truly are, your battle will be over. You hate the defects, you hate the disease, but you don't hate yourself. We don't hate each other, we hate the disease. So one night, I was about 30 days clean, and I had this, I was seeing this girl. I thought it was a real relationship, but it was nothing. It was just totally sick. And I thought, you know, we'll get clean together, we'll have an NA wedding, be an NA couple. The wedding gown will be basic text blue. We will have this amazing life, you know. And actually, she's never come, and she's still using. But she used to say, why don't you come over and the drug dealers are here and just get them out of here so I don't use. that sounds good to me. I'll be Captain Recovery. I'll save her. So I get a, you know, welcome to NA and meeting schedule. Bad neighborhood. We had people robbing meetings where I lived in northern Indiana and Chicago. We had addicts come in NA meetings, robbing meetings of Southern Tradition. That's how bad this neighborhood I used to live in. I moved from there. I moved to Oregon now. I knocked on the door, you know, and I got welcome NA and meeting schedule. Big smile on my face. She opens the door. She sees me, slams the door. I was like, I'm just gonna stand here. So I wait, the door opens up again. She's high. She's angry. I have what she doesn't have, and she doesn't know how to get it. So she's very, very full of rage. And she comes flying out the front door with a hammer, and she attacks me. And she almost kills me. My glasses flew off, she held them down on the ground, destroyed them. She hit me right here, almost killed me. If you're gonna do a 12-step call, do it with somebody who wants this program and do it with some other people. It almost cost me my life. But the interesting thing about that is she had a baby she used the whole time she was pregnant. And I remember using with her and some people in this drug house, and she would take her little baby and stick it in a closet, and then she would use and use and use. And then I got clean, and she never got clean or anything like that. And when her son was about 3 years old, I found out his birthday is my birthday, my regular birthday, August 24th. And I said, do you mind if I get involved in his life? Because his dad's in prison for life, he's an addict. It's a really high-risk neighborhood, high-crime neighborhood. The little boys in that neighborhood, they smoke cigarettes at about 11. They get girls pregnant at 12. They join gangs at 13. They drop out of school at 13. They have guns by maybe 14 in gangs. And that's their life. And this is like South Chicago, northern Indiana, stuff like that. She said, no, that'd be great. Keep in touch with me. So I started staying in touch with her. Christmas, Halloween, all these things, you know, birthday. And just always staying in touch with him. Well, he just turned 16 now, or 15. He's in school band, he's in music, he's in sports, he gets straight A's grades, he's doing all these positive things, he's anti-drugs. And he said, when you talk to those NA people, tell them thank you. You go all over the world and you do all this stuff. I don't know what that is, but I know it's done something to you because you told me your story. So NA is affecting people that aren't even addicts, changing their lives. I have another guy like that who I was a salesman at a music store. I sold him all these amps and guitars and all this thousands of dollars of equipment just so he could play in his bedroom because he's a millionaire. And played along with records. I mean, I'm talking a lot of stuff to play along with records, with albums. Anyway, we never met. And we became friends, and we've still never met. And in the interim, in the last, say, 10 years, he lost his house, he lost his career, he lost his mother, he lost his wife, left him. He's had cancer, he's got all these things. And he calls me about once every 2 months for 10 years. And he says, you're the only person I can talk to. And he also says, you know, that NA is just an amazing, amazing program. I've never met this guy, never met him, but he is directly affected by what the program has comes through me. So these are the kind of things, how powerful this program is. I am going to talk about this thing about this defining this whole. I realized that they said that you can be free when you're clean. Freedom from active addiction. But I wasn't free. It's like I go have an ice cream cone. I'd worry about if they're open. I'd worry if they had my flavor. I'd worry what happened when the ice cream cone was done. I would be like obsessive and compulsive. And I wasn't free. I was still like acting out in a different version of the addiction. And I started to see that, you know, there's like a God hole. And only a higher power can fill that. And then there's like a hole for music and love and relationships and nature and food and fun and sports and all those things. And when I try to fill the God hole with those things, it doesn't work. And it gets frustrating. But when I can enjoy those things in perspective for what they are, and not expect like nirvana out of an ice cream cone, I'm free. I can just enjoy it. Now that doesn't make me sad. That doesn't make me live like a monk. It actually makes me enjoy things even better because I know their perspective. I know their place. It's like one time I asked a friend of mine, I said, the way that person acts, it really bothers me. And she says, it's not their job to make you happy. That's God's job. Lower your expectations. These are human beings. This is an A. You know, we're not people who've been in all kinds of problems and issues, and we have issues. We got scars. We got more than issues. We got scars. And it just blew my mind. You know, it was like, that's amazing that I don't have to let these things really affect me. They still do. I mean, the other day I couldn't get my bank account, I couldn't get on my Gmail because they locked me out because I'm in a different country and they thought I was a hacker, so they locked me out. I was like, I told them that I was doing this, so it's not a hacker's me. But you know, we have to have acceptance. Acceptance isn't always approval. I can accept things but not approve of it. And I can either remove myself from it or I can accept it. That's really all I can do. So I've understood this thing about what defines us, or what makes us whole, what makes us complete, and about this God hole. And it's a really beautiful thing to understand that. It's like, things are not gonna go as well as we think they're gonna go, and things change all the time. But we think that that takes our serenity away, and it really, really doesn't. But we're so conditioned. There's always a greater happiness than things going my way. There really is. There really, really is. That's one of the greatest things NA has shown me. You know, this has shown me a way to deal with life and deal with myself and deal with all my defects, all these things that happen. You know that the average human lifespan is about 25,550 days. That's it. If you had 25,550 kroners or whatever you have here, it's not very much. And yet, I want to live my life in a way like, oh, I got plenty of time. I mean, I don't say live like panic or afraid, but I want to live my life to get the most out of it every day. Because you really never know. Every breath, not just every day, every breath is a gift. I'm not making that breath happen. It's coming. But I never cared when I was using it. NA showed me gratitude. Not only having gratitude, but gratitude to something. I call God in my life is my best friend. That's the higher power of my life. Yeah. Real simple. My best friend. Unconditional. But that higher power works for all you guys. We all get that. We all work through each other. So, I've gone through a lot of things clean. A lot of people have passed away. I've had all these different things that I've gone through clean. But then a lot of amazing things have happened, too. I was the first person in my family to go to college. And I went and got this human services degree. I'm not using it. I can't find a job with it. But I did it. And, you know, it was really something, you know, just to do something like that. Because, you know, I used to say, no way. No way can I go to Denmark. No way. No way can I get a college degree. No way can I have a healthy relationship with a woman. No way can I, be healthy. No way. No way. And now it's like, why not? Why not? Who says you can't? What page does that say on the basic text? It says that we can have it all. But it's, I have to keep it in perspective. I have to always have recovery first. Clean time is priority one. Nothing will happen if I go over that clean time. So about 3 years ago, I went through a really tough time. I started feeling self-pity. I was like, I went to school, I didn't get this career. the girlfriend left. You know, I need to like start going after some things. And I'll keep my recovery in check. And I felt like a failure all over again. I lost hope. I was losing gratitude. So I'm starting to like, you know, work on this business and maybe find a new girl. And I'm doing all this outside stuff. And it's an inside job. And people are saying, you better watch it. I said, I know what I'm doing. I'm not distracted. I'm not complacent. Bullshit. I was getting complacent. I was getting distracted because it's a very, very subtle thing. And all of a sudden, one day, right time, right place, you're going to pick up. You're going to use. And you know what's saving? Newcomers. The old timers have taught me over and over and over and over and over again. Newcomers, 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 newcomers. We get kind of used to them. We see them a lot. Take it in stride. But every newcomer, you got that one shot, that one chance. You may never see them again. One chance to say or do something that will change your life. Have you ever had the pleasure of somebody coming to you a year or two later and they're clean and you haven't seen them and they say, you know, you said something to me one night, or you gave me that hug one night. See, I don't know who here is thinking about suicide. I don't know who's here thinking about using it, blowing their head off. I don't know you people. That's why this is very, very serious. It's really life or death. You may not die, but you can end up alone and miserable the rest of your life. I've seen it. I've seen people that didn't use. They stay clean, but they're alone and they're miserable. And like, why would we do that, you know? When it's an endless process that we can get so much more out of than we ever imagined. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the stories, and then I'll wrap it up. I told them I'd probably want to share about an hour, so I made some notes here, and I'm sticking to that plan. I'll tell you one more thing that happened that just came to mind here. So my father was an addict. He was a really, really good guy. And he was really good provider for the family, and he was an Air Force man, and he was just really great. And he was dying. He was on dialysis. And one day, and I was still using, and he needed me to drive him to the dialysis center to get his treatment. And I told him no. And the reason I told him no is because I felt I was not good enough to help my father. You think very strange things when we're using. He needed my help. He needed me to drive him there. I wouldn't do it. I just said, you're the father. You know, you help me. I'm the son. I can't help the father. And I felt such low esteem that I did it. So I didn't drive him. He drove himself. When he got there, he had a stroke because he wasn't supposed to drive. He died shortly after that. So I live with that, but I forgive myself. Because the man you see here today is a totally different man. And he is completely transformed. You would not know me. You would not know me. So it's like this balcony here. It's like you get 6 months clean and higher power teaches you on this balcony and says, I got this view. Looks pretty good. You go, yeah. About a year clean, bigger balcony. I like this view. Wow. Just keeps happening. And then this God of mine just keeps giving me this unconditional love. And I'm like, it's cool. Really, you really don't have to. I'm fine. You like it? Here, have some more. No, I don't deserve it. It's all right. Here, have some more. No, not really. Really, now, come on. No, here, have some more. Kid, get used to it. I'm the giver, you're the receiver. It's okay, that's the way this is. Because the basic text says we get what we receive what we put into this program. I'm sorry, I disagree. I disagree with the 5,000 group conscious that wrote that. I feel I get much more out of what I put into this. And I'm not trying to be humble. I'm just stating a fact. If this was about deserve, there ain't no deserve here. If it was deserve, I wouldn't be here. It doesn't add up. I did very, very bad things to myself. If you treated me like I treated me, I would probably want to commit homicide. I mean, I think of what I did to myself over and over and over again. It's like you know Oasis when you're in the desert and it's dry and you're just dying of thirst. We are in this desert of using. And then we come to this beautiful, fresh, spring water. And it's endless. And we'll be like, I'll get a bottle, but I'll, it's like, why do I do that? Why do I keep filling that bottle up? And that's what I really try to do. I really try to live in a way that bottle is being filled up all the time. So in closing, I'll tell you a story that's good. I got a lot of stories. Whatever you're going through right now, I don't care how difficult it is. If you stay here, if you work this program, I guarantee it's going to be okay. It will be okay. You know, I want to say a little bit about unity. Jimmy Kay used to end meetings with, we love you, we need you, and we want you. And I've seen NA over the world, and Denmark has got something very special here. And I see the unity, and I see the love. And of course, we have personalities, and we got opinions, and we have gossip. There's no time for that. There's people dying in this town right now that don't even know we're sitting here. They don't even know we exist. You have family and friends that need us. We don't do this alone. We have a very big job to do. Like I said at the beginning, addiction is the scourge of the planet. It is the worst thing on the planet. And we need everybody. If you're a newcomer, we need you. You can do something. Everybody can do it. Anybody that can make a pipe out of anything, they're pretty intelligent people, right? They're very creative, intelligent people. So we have very talented people. You know, recovery looks good on you guys. You guys are beautiful. I'm sure you're intelligent. I'm sure you're creative. I'm sure you have all kinds of talents. But it's about getting that empowerment. You know, we need leadership, we need mentorship, we need sponsorship, we need communication, you know? It's very, very important. It's not about control or ego, it's about leadership, mentorship, helping each other. Because we're not all on the same page. We're not better than anybody, but we're on different pages. So when you go back to whatever you go back to, job or crazy screaming kids or husband you fight with, or wife you fight with, or whatever you go back to Monday, remember this, because it's true. This is reality. We often say, I'm going back to reality Monday after the convention. It's not true. That's an illusion. This is reality. This is real. We were hopeless, hopeless, hopeless addicts. And look at this. This is a miracle beyond all miracles. Only 61 years old out of centuries and centuries and centuries of addiction. That's why I say I can never repay anything. No. If I got nothing else the rest of my life, I would be completely satisfied. I couldn't get out of a basement. I've been all over the world. I was in Bangladesh, most impoverished nation on earth, 145 million people. Average income is about $2,000 a year. And they took me to a treatment center to talk to some people. And I went into this room, and there was all these little boys there. And I was talking to these boys, they'd never seen a Westerner, they'd never seen a white man. And they were like 10 years old, 9 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old. And they all came around, and they were very happy to see me. And then I said, well, we have to go now, we have to go to the meeting. And the NA member, they had like 20 meetings in the whole country. And the NA member said, this is the meeting. I said, this is the meeting. I said, who are these boys? He said, these are recovering addicts. I got a picture of it down here. When he said these are NA members, they all said, NA, NA, NA. I'm in the middle of Bangladesh in the jungle. The NA program has reached these orphan boys they picked up off the street that were sniffing paint and glue and heroin and doing these drugs. They put them in this treatment center. They had no parents. And they're key recovering members of NA. In the middle of the jungles of Bangladesh. We had this project that started NA again in East Africa, and it was a real long thing to raise money and do it, but they had a huge addiction rate, 39% of the adults were addicts in Tanzania, and Zanzibar, Kenya. So a team of us went, you know, we took a lot of planning, and we had World Services translated some things in Swahili, and Margie and me and quite a few people went, and people from Norway and different places, and there was nothing there. They didn't even know what a step was or a tradition. I mean, everything had to be taught. So I'm getting ready to leave, and I have my famous backpack that many of you are going to become familiar with if you hang around me. And I'm always looking, and I'm always losing things in my backpack. I'm always looking, where did I put that? So anyway, so I'm getting ready to leave, and I have some meeting schedules for my local town. I'm in Southern Oregon now, Southern Oregon area. Home group is called Peace, Love, and Understanding. And we do the Living Clean book. And the guy is pointing at the meeting schedules. I had two meeting schedules for my area in English. And he's going like that. Swahili is a beautiful language. Like, they kept on saying Pendo Moja, Pendo Moja. And that means one love. And they were talking about enemy. They kept on saying Pendo Moja. So he wants the meeting schedule. Like, okay, yeah, meeting schedule. And these people will never, never leave Africa. They're just not, unless they somehow get an education or something. And so I gave him a meeting schedule. He can't read it. He's not coming to Oregon. He just wants a meeting schedule. So I just wonder, what do you really want that for? So we go to say goodbye and go to this hut. We have a little meeting in the hut. And in the hut, he's got this United States meeting schedule on the hut wall. And see, there's a banner there from Africa with the giraffe and stuff. That was a dress. Some lady gave it to me. I mean, she didn't take it off and give it to me. So anyway, so they had the meeting schedule on the hut. And I said, there was a guy translating, and I said, why does he want that schedule? He's not going to go to the meeting. Well, our schedules have the NA logo on the front. And he goes like this, and here's the schedule. He points at it. He points right at the NA. He goes like this. Okay. So there was two schedules. I'm looking for the other schedule. I wonder what happened to it. It's not in the hut. So they had a woman's house. So we went to the woman's house, and there was the other schedule on the wall of the woman's house. Just to see the NA was so, so important for them. It gave them so much hope. So that's what I'm going to talk about in close. I'm going to tell you a story about hope. You know, we keep what we have by giving it away. And I think what we give each other more than anything is love and hope. That's all I ever wanted. So there's a little boy, and he's in his house, and he's playing video games, and he's having a good time. He's playing games. He's just playing, laughing, and then he got bored. He's tired of it. You know, he's like, program or some spiritual principles because he's in all these games and it's not satisfying. It's not going to God, you know? And so he hears another little boy down the hall laughing. And he goes, So he goes down the hall, and in this room is another little boy. The little boy in the second room has nothing in the room. No video games, no toys, no anything. But there's one thing in the room. The smell. Over in the corner of the room is a little pile of horse manure. Horse shit. In the corner of the room. Little pile. And he says, why are you smiling and laughing? You have no toys, you have no video games, nothing here. I got all these games and toys, and I'm not happy and I'm bored, and you're happy here. Matter of fact, there's a pile of horse manure in the corner. What makes you so happy? Why are you so happy? And the little boy goes, because I know there's a pony around here somewhere.